Welcome, everybody, to the Illness and Recovery Workshop of WICNUT 31. My name is Eddie, and I am an addict. Help me open this meeting this morning with a moment of silence, followed by the Serenity Prayer. God, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference. Amen. And Dave has been asked to read, "What is the Narcotics Anonymous Program?"
A nickname Dave. What is the Narcotics Anonymous Program? NA is a nonprofit fellowship or society of men and women for whom drugs have become a major problem. We are recovering addicts who meet regularly to help each other stay clean. This is a program of complete abstinence from all drugs. There is only one requirement for membership, the desire to stop using. We suggest that you keep an open mind and give yourself a break. Our program is a set of principles written so simply that we can follow them in our daily lives. The most important thing about them is that they work. There are no strings attached to NA. We are not affiliated with any other organizations. We have no initiation fees or dues, no pledges to sign, no promises to make to anyone. We are not connected with any political, religious, or law enforcement groups and are under no surveillance at any time. Anyone may join us regardless of age, race, sexual identity, creed, religion, or lack of religion. We are not interested in what or how much you have used or who your connections were, what you have done in the past, how much or how little you have, but only on what you want to do about your problem and how we can help. The newcomer is the most important person at any meeting because we can only keep what we have by giving it away. We have learned from our group experience that those who keep coming to our meetings regularly stay clean.
And Jimmy has been asked to read, "Why Are We Here?"
My name is Jimmy, and I'm an addict. And why are we here? Before coming to the fellowship of NA, we could not manage our own lives. We could not live and enjoy life as other people do. We had to have something different, and we thought we had found it in drugs. We placed the use ahead of the welfare of our families, our wives, husbands, and our children. We had to have drugs at all costs. We did many people great harm, but most of all, we harmed ourselves. Through our inability to accept personal responsibilities, we were actually creating our own problems. We seem to be incapable of facing life on its own terms. Most of us realize that in our addiction, we were slowly committing suicide, but addiction is such a cunning enemy of life that we had lost the power to do anything about it. Many of us ended up in jail or sought help through medicine, religion, and psychiatry. None of these methods was sufficient for us. Our disease always resurfaced or continued to progress until in desperation we sought help from each other in Narcotics Anonymous. After coming to NA, we realized we were sick people. We suffer from a disease from which there is no known cure. It can, however, be arrested at some point and recovery is then possible.
Thank you.
Okay. And at this time, I would like to introduce our first speaker, Claire M. from Oregon.
I would like to be standing, but that would be hard. Hi, I'm Claire. I'm an addict.
Hi, Claire.
First of all, let me say that in this last year, before I even realized that the convention was going to be here, I had two dreams that I was in Hawaii. One of the dreams, I was driving along a highway next to the ocean, and the other dream was that I was in a Narcotics Anonymous convention with, you know, a whole bunch of people. So when the opportunity came up for me to come here, I really thought that it was I was destined to do so, given those dreams. Well, I got to tell you, it's so incredible here. I have tried to cram everything into one day. And let me tell you, I am paying the consequences today. Battered and bruised and thrilled that I was able to do what I wanted to do, which was to get in the ocean. I wanted to to get a snorkel and see the fish. But that ocean tossed me around like a tennis ball until finally I got up on the shore and just let, you know, the water come to me. So what an experience that. I mean, that was like my personal Mount Everest to do that at this time in my life. I still can't believe that I actually did it. So give you a little history. I've been in recovery since 1977 in Portland, Oregon. And at the time I came in to recovery, there was just a handful of us in Portland. And, you know, we all clung to each other, basically, in order to try to stay clean. Well, in the old school approach, you know, you didn't take medication, you didn't take drugs, ever. Even if your butt fell off, we used to say, you know, we had guys talking about having surgery with no anesthetic. And I mean, come on. I at one point realized that it was a real ego trip, too, you know, and that I had to count on my higher power. About 10 years ago, I was having some bizarre symptoms, and I was diagnosed with Parkinson's disease and hepatitis C, which I figured I already had because all my friends did, you know, and the life I came from, it was likely that I also had it, and diabetes. And I've told this story often that my doctor told me that stuff, I just stood in the middle of the room and turned around in a circle about 3 or 4 times. Just, I couldn't comprehend what she was saying, you know, I mean, it was just like, I was like a dog trying to lie down, you know, around a circle 4 or 5 times. So I want to tell you that I have all the answers on how to be sick and be in recovery. And in my own experience has been that the first year since my diagnosis, I lay down on the couch and waited to die. I figured, okay, that's it. You know? So at the end of that year when I wasn't dead, I thought I may as well get up. And so I did that. And when I did that, my life started to change. The circumstances started to change. And I was able to move into the home of a, you know, probably my best friend in the world, someone I trusted explicitly. And they built an apartment for me in their home, she and her partner. And I've lived there for the last 8 years. And it's wonderful. This is the first time in recovery that I haven't wanted to move every year. I was one of those people, too. Searching. I've all, you know, searching for something. Always searching for that place to be, that place where I'm secure. And I mean, I know it's not in a material place, but that helps make it in my heart where, you know, where I really get that sense of security. The one thing about the illnesses that I have is that I have to take a lot of medication. And there's another big controversy about medications. And it's gotten better. I think people have really, I think that we've had to open our eyes. Because I think if we stick around here, there's a lot of people who are ill. They just are. And I know with the Parkinson's, when I started really feeling bad was about 10 years before the Parkinson's with menopause, the dreaded menopause. And I was one of those lucky people that went absolutely berserk with menopause and was literally forced to take antidepressants, you know. So again, that was very controversial, but it was either that or suicide or homicide, you know. And it helped me. It really did help me. I mean, I promptly sat down and embroidered this very, you know, intricate piece of thing, read 2 or 3 books in a week, you know, and things I couldn't do because I couldn't concentrate. But since that time, the medications that I take also have kind of a sedative quality to them, and, you know, the Parkinson's causes depression, and the medication that you take causes depression. So you have to get in the middle there and get the antidepressants that work to counteract it. I mean, it goes on and on. You all know if you're dealing with illnesses. What I do know that saves me is that people know what I'm doing in terms of taking medication. And, you know, just people just know, I just don't try to keep anything a secret. I can't do that. I know that yesterday, I've got to tell you about this. When I came here, I didn't rehearse anything. I just tried to get some kind of ideas about what I'd talk about. And I had some, and this is going to tell you that, oh, you know, my life is just grand, you know. And it is. Let me say it is. So yesterday I tried this adventure, the grand adventure of going in the water. And not only did I fall down and get all bunged up, what else happened? I fell down. I got the sunscreen in my eyes. It burned like hell. I got the sunscreen in my eyes. I got a huge blister on my foot. Later we were having dinner, and Pam had to give me the Heimlich remover because I choked on a piece of meat. I thought, okay, higher power, that's fine. I got it. And by the time I got back to the hotel, I'm saying, I hate this illness. This is just making me crazy. I can't stand it. I can't stand to not be able to do these things. And that's just part of the deal, I guess. That's what I've come to realize, you know, that some days it's fine with me. I just say, that's cool. I'm all right, you know. And I kind of like last night, I just felt like I was so infirmed, you know, and I really got such a close up look at that in trying to do these things that, you know, 10 years ago I could do without giving it a thought. And now it's a struggle. It took 3 people to get me down to the ocean, you know, and 3 or 4 to get me back up. And, you know, and I'm still, so I thought my higher power was giving me that experience to show me, again, some limitations and how you can get over those limitations and do what you want to do. You pay a price, and that's fine with me. That's fine with me. I can pay that price. You know, I've got a lot of time to rest up, a lot of time. Being in Hawaii is probably one of the most thrilling experiences in my life. Being in the Narcotics Anonymous Convention, even more so. I mean, I don't know how many people are here, but I venture to say in the thousands. And, you know, I've met people from all over the world. And I have been afraid to also, since I've been ill, to really do anything risky, you know, much less leave my house. That's a big risk. I used to have to go out and stand on the porch for 10 minutes. And just so I could say, yes, I was outside. That went on for quite a while. So coming here for me is huge. You know, getting on an airplane, flying here, it's just monumental to me. I just can't believe that my higher power would give me an opportunity like this. You know, this is the person that came into recovery with 2 black eyes, a 6-month-old baby. And a heroin habit, you know, and to think that over these years that I've been able to come to this, you know. And also on the schedule for my life for the rest of this year is that I'm going to Mexico in November. And I think, well, this is a good dress rehearsal for that. For that trip, I wouldn't go the last 4 years to Mexico because I was too afraid. And then I just got to thinking, you know, if not now, when? You know, if not now, when am I going to go? So just go. You know, so you get tired. So you lay down. So you fall down. So you get up. You know, that's just sort of how it is on those good days. And I got to tell you that at this point, I have many more good days than I do hard days. Many more. And I, as I said, there are those times when I just think that, why did this have to happen? It, you know, I hurt this, that. And I just think, well, you know, that's just the way it is. And, you know, and again, our program teaches, maybe there's something I'm going to say here today that's going to help somebody. And, you know, that's a gift to me, that working with other people. I had called a sponsee of mine who, one time when I was having a really rough time, and said, bring me a meeting. So she brought 5 girls. She brought people she sponsored and people they sponsored. And so we had about 5 or 6 people. And that meeting's still going on every other week at my house, you know. And it's something that everyone looks forward to, as well as me, of course. I mean, that blows my mind. Just bring me a meeting. That's all I said. Boom, boom, the next day they were all here. I mean, all at my house. So, you know, the joy of being in Narcotics Anonymous and the support that I get here is just phenomenal. And I'll tell you something else, that there are some days when I feel like I am the luckiest person on the planet, that I really am, that I am so blessed. I am so incredibly blessed. And when when I really can feel that is when I'm sitting in these rooms and, you know, see other people's recovery. That's wonderful to me, too, seeing the other people that came after I got here, seeing their recovery and watching them grow. How much time do I have here?
We got an hour.
How much time have I taken up? Oh, my God. He says I've only had 10 minutes and I'm about a half hour to talk. I'm so flustered because we got lost getting here this morning. I don't know what happened. We took a wrong turn or something, and Pam and I are in our scooters going all over Honolulu and Waikiki and terrorizing people. I've already got a rep, I told Pam. Getting the scooter on and off the elevator, good Lord. So, but, you know, that's how it goes. And I just want to say a little bit about my history in recovery. I don't particularly talk about my story because I think we all have that experience. I will say that my youngest son was born at my mother's house in the bathroom because I didn't realize that he was coming at that point because it was 2 months early. And he is now 29 years old. He was born 3 pounds, you know, 3 ounces. He's still 19 or 17 inches long, a little tall, skinny baby. And he is now 29, and he's in treatment. He's in treatment. You know, I just can't believe it. Now he's been in there about a year because he gets kicked out all the time for kissing girls. You know, that's what they're saying. He falls in love so much. But, you know, that's thrilling to me. I have a daughter, the daughter that delivered him is in recovery. She's in 5 years. And, you know, that's thrilling. This last year has been a really rough year. We've had a lot of pain. We've had loss of a family member that we all love very much that was very sudden and unexpected. And my illness has kicked up. My symptoms are just off the wall yesterday and today. You know, I'm just bouncing all over the room. And the Parkinson's sometimes, it's not just trembling. You know, my body just goes, like you might see me now, just goes berserk, you know, and I look like I'm tweaking or something, you know. And I always want to say, I'm not drunk and I'm not under the influence because it looks like I am, really. So I said, well, I should get those medic alert bracelets. And suddenly I thought, I needed a charm bracelet from all the medic alerts that I need. So I haven't gone that way. But I love this program. I love it with all my heart. It keeps, not only does it keep me free from drugs, it teaches me how to live on a daily basis under whatever circumstances are presented to me. I thought the worst thing that could ever happen with my young son was that he would be arrested and go to jail. And that happened this year, this last year. And that, I thought my heart was broken. And that, of course, developed into an opportunity for him to go to treatment. The best thing that could have possibly happened. So, you know, the circumstance that you're facing, that I'm facing, might look horrible on the surface, but not necessarily. You know, that there is a light at that end of that tunnel, and it's a good light. Like yesterday, like I said, here I was all burned and bruised and out of my mind and just exhausted. And I thought to myself, well, you know, maybe this is a good thing. This is probably a good thing because it'll just keep me in a place where I can really tell you about what it's like for me. You know, the limitations that I face and the things that I can overcome, and I don't really know until I try, you know. And I was thinking yesterday, now there's a fine line between self-will run riot and determination, going for a goal. You know? And I think I probably crossed both those lines yesterday. And that's okay too. I just felt like I had to do that and get it touching that water in this amazing place, being here on this island with all of you. It's absolutely phenomenal. Absolutely phenomenal. I am so grateful. I'm so grateful to be here. One thing I was going to mention to the committee is that 9 o'clock in the morning is not the best time to have a speaker's meeting on. It takes me like 2-3 hours to get going in the morning. And here we are coming over here and we're lost. And I'm thinking, oh, my God. But we made it. I made it. And I think that's about all for me. I'm just wanting to take some stuff in now, and I'm still a little spaced out from yesterday. So thank you all for being here. Thanks to the committee for inviting me to be here. It's an absolute thrill. And I love you, all of you. And my heart is incredibly full. Thanks.
All right. Thank you, Claire. And now I'd like to introduce our second speaker from California, Jeff C.
Morning. My name is Jeff, and I'm an addict. And like Claire, then thanks for sharing. That was really special for me. I'm real grateful to be here, you know, and thank the committee for the privilege of sharing whatever experience, strength, and hope that I might have. And, you know, Claire was talking about looking forward to coming to Hawaii. And 2 years ago, my wife and I had the honor and privilege to go to San Diego, the 50th anniversary of Narcotics Anonymous. And we saw the flyer for Hawaii. And it's like, I immediately thought, I'm there. We're there, you know. And actually, last year, we went to Kauai to celebrate my mother's 80th birthday. And so last night, we just came in yesterday, and we were walking through the hotel, and we have this thing, you can go visit some other island for a great deal, and like we're already making plans to go to Hawaii, the big island, you know. So I don't know, for me, typical addict, you know, a little's good, a lot's even better, you know. And Claire was talking about, you know, themes. I mean, I've been thinking about, you know, what I'm going to say, and I'm glad it's early. Because, you know, my head still says, you know, what do you really have to share, you know, in that sort of sense of self-doubt and I've come to realize that really what I share is from loving God and what that higher power has put into my life because of Narcotics Anonymous. And that's really all I got to do is just show up, you know. And but there are those people who... There are two types of people, I think. People who make lists and people who don't make lists. And I'm the one that makes lists, you know. And I'll make a list and it's not even completed, and I'll make another list because I've got to add to the list, you know. And sometimes I can get pretty twisted up doing that. But, you know, and I can laugh about it. I can tell on myself, you know. And that's one of the joys of Narcotics Anonymous. I get to continually tell on myself and all of my inadequacies and issues that I deal with, you know, and I find out that I'm not alone because, you know, I got here feeling very alone. You know, I've had a life of, like Claire talked about, I've had a life of illness, a bit different, but growing up, I was in and out of hospitals in my teenage years and lots of surgery and just, you know, lots of illness. And I remember I was in college and I was supposed to go in for this little short surgery. It was during like a spring break between quarters. And Dr. said, okay, you'll only be in the hospital like 3 days. You'll be out, you'll be back. And, you know, I'd registered for the spring quarter. And I was a senior at that point, so classes were pretty important to get, you know, get things ready to graduate. And I think I was in the hospital like 7 days, you know, and a lot of pain. And I remember laying there one night thinking, how the hell am I ever going to have a job? You know, I mean, I've been 6 consecutive summers in and out of, in hospitals for surgeries, kind of the same thing, same general treatment. And I thought, you know, I just, you know, what company is ever going to hire me? You know, I mean, I got to take off 6 weeks a year for illness. And I remember laying there at night and how lonely I felt and really hopeless I felt. And I was in a lot of pain, and they came in and they gave me that shot of Demerol or morphine or whatever it was. And I just have a real conscious recollection that not only did that medication take away the physical pain, it took away all that emotional pain that I'd suffered from for so long, you know. And, you know, and you know, 5 minutes after the shot, man, I was, you know, who cared, you know. And I wanted to follow that for as long as I could, you know. And like our readings talk about the progressiveness of our illness, you know, it took me a while, but it progressed. I mean, I somehow did make it through college, and I worked for a Fortune 500 company, and I had a, you know, I was trained well, and I had a good job, and I had this big secret, you know, that whenever I could use, I would use, you know, and whenever I found drugs, I couldn't stop until they were all gone, you know. And each time, it got harder and harder to stop. I wanted more, you know. I still joke that I think that if anybody knew me back then, they probably would have thought I had the weakest bladder in the world, because as soon as I got into somebody's house, I wanted to hit, I got to go to the restroom. And my thinking was, I want to get into the medicine cabinet before anybody else does, you know. And even if I didn't know what it was, you know, if it had one of those red tags, do not operate around, you know, moving equipment, it's like, it's good, I'll figure it out, you know. And I got real good at going to the library and looking in the physician's desk reference. And I always wondered, that's usually a reference book, and they have to try to check it out. They always give me these dirty looks, you know. Well, I've come to realize now, in recovery, the only one that ever look, the only people that ever look at that are addicts, because we're trying to figure out what we got and how we can use it and spin it or trade it or, you know, and... So I got real good at that, you know. And again, you know, as that progression, you know, it moved on, because my connection was essentially doctors. And, you know, I think of myself as a smart guy, you know, and I got to the point where, you know, I just trying to save a doctor's time, and it's a matter of efficiency. And I thought I'd start writing my own scripts. And I found out something in the state of California. They don't like you to write prescriptions unless you went to medical school. And I didn't go to medical school. And so I started to pay the price for that. You know, got arrested twice, you know, destroyed a number of jobs, or I was out the door just before they fired me, you know. I destroyed a marriage. And my whole thinking all along was, I'm really not hurting anybody. I mean, the only one I'm hurting is myself. You know, why don't they just leave me alone? And again, one of those spiritual awarenesses I've had in recovery is I hurt a lot of people. You know, my parents, you know, the woman I was married to, my son, you know, the woman I'm married to today knew me before I got clean, you know, and just all those times of, yeah, I'll be there. Because I made a million promises and, you know, I couldn't keep any. Because as soon as that madness, you know, came over me, I had to do whatever I had to do, you know. Even if it was like down a totally self-destructive path, you know. And so, you know, I actually got introduced to Narcotics Anonymous 4.5 years before my clean date now. And it was after that second arrest. And I had never known anything about NA. You know, I was recommended to go to NA. I was living in Ventura County, California, just north of L.A. area. And a guy hooked me up with an addict who took me to a meeting. My first meeting was in Oxnard, California. And, you know, everything I needed, I really heard at that first meeting. I looked around. This was in 1983, and I looked around at that meeting, and that meeting's still there on Monday nights on C Street in Oxnard. And there was the Harley Davidsons and the black leather and the chains, and that was just the women, And the speaker that night, he just a great story. I mean, I loved it, I think he had, some incredible amount of time. I think he had 6 or 7 years clean at that point. And, he talked about, the life of crime and, all these things. And the last thing that really happened to him before he got into treatment and went to jail is that he was in a shootout in a cabbage patch up in Salinas, California with, like, FBI agents, And I'm sitting here, I'm new to Narcotics Anonymous, and I'm thinking, geez, not only have I not been able to live a life without illness, I'm even a failure as an addict, And I honestly felt that way, because I didn't feel better than those people. I felt very intimidated because I felt actually less than. Then my self-ego and grandiosity is like, what's my big story? I never tore anybody off for, thousands of, pills or narcotics or, this or that, never had a big score. I mean, my big play was I go into the pharmacy, lay a script down, say please, and be ready to run, that was my big play, And so it was hard for me, and I had a perception of what an addict was. And, to me at that time, an addict was, in my mind, typically a man who had a lot of tattoos, spent a lot of time in prison, stuck needles in his arm, and lived in a Maytag box on any street USA, And there were addicts that fit that exact description. Gratefully, Narcotics Anonymous has grown, and we've, with the help of a loving God, made room for all of us, and welcomed all of us, and the healing that comes with that. And so, over that 4.5 years, you probably heard it said that, a head full of Narcotics Anonymous and a body full of drugs just doesn't work. And I never got arrested again, but, at the end of my using, I was never suicidal per se, I did a lot of things that, you'd wonder. But there were a lot of times I used to think, if I could just turn the lights out and just slip on out, it'd be no big loss. Because I really felt hopeless and helpless that I was alone. And through a series of events and intervention, I got into a treatment facility. And this man there who ultimately became my grand sponsor, he just has this innate way of looking at an addict and knowing what they need. And I know today it's the love we have for one another, and the care. And he knew that I needed to somehow connect with somebody. And he had a sponsee that also had a, kind of a lifetime of illness. And he brought this guy in to kind of speak. We had like panel meetings. And when Steve came in that first night, I think I had like 18 days clean. And I tell you, it's like the lights went down and this man was talking to me. I felt I was not alone anymore. Here was a guy that kind of a similar upbringing, and not that that's so important, but it was to me at the time. That was my I had no recovery experience. And I went up and talked to him after the meeting, and I remember, clean time was real important. And so I remember asking Steve, I said, well, how much time do you have? And he said, well, I'm coming up on 7 years. And I just looked at him with sort of a, an incredulous look and said, how do you get 7 years? And, for someone who thought he was pretty smart, I was really pretty dumb. And I had it all backwards. And what Steve said to me has really rung true ever since. And I've never forgotten it. He looked at me and just smiled. And he said, all I do is stay clean just for today. And the weeks and the months and the years have all taken care of themselves. And that's really been true. And, the illnesses that, brought me here or exposed me to, those pesky drugs, have continued to, plague me. When I was so sick, I had a bunch of blood transfusions and plasma, and somewhere in one of those, I got jaundice real bad, and I got better, And I remember my dad saying even the whites of my eyes were yellow. I was so sick. And that was on top of being sick on all the other things. But not really, back then, this was 67, they didn't really know that much about hepatitis and ultimately what I got was hepatitis C. Probably some pesky addict selling his blood to get some money to get a fix, so maybe it's only appropriate that I'm here today. In the early 80s, even before I got into treatment, they detected something in the liver enzymes and all that stuff, and they did a biopsy, and all they knew then was they called it chronic active hepatitis, non-A, non-B. They didn't know what to do, so I just sort of went on. Of course, I was doing my thing at that time out, running and ripping and running and using. But again, after I got clean, I started thinking about my health and, I had a little bit, I wasn't on a self-destructive path. I actually remember the first thing is that I was having a lot of knee problems. I think I had been clean maybe 60 days. My knee was bothering me. And I was actually scared to death because I was afraid I'm going to have knee surgery and have to, they'd give me something that would awaken that madness again in me. And like I say, it just petrified me. And I remember talking to my sponsor about it. I think for days I've been telling, I got to call a doctor. I got to call a doctor. And, that typical sponsor wisdom, he says, you don't want to rush into this, right? I got off and called the doctor right away and made an appointment. And I just followed direction. And I'm so grateful that, we have members around here that can share with us their experiences that have been here, and what worked for them, when I went in and talked to the doctor, I told him I was in recovery, and I told him I was scared to death, and about the, drugs, and he says, the guy had a smile from ear to ear, he says, hey, I can take care of it, we can put a local anesthetic in your knee, it's long time release, and he says, it won't be that bad, All I ended up taking was Advil, one more time, it's like my fears of what, the illness would bring have been largely unfounded. And of course, really what happened at that, that all transpiring, is that, I had a program of recovery, I had NA members in my life, I had a sponsor, and I had a loving God, And those are the things that I need to kind of, direct me spiritually. Because really, when I'm spiritually fit, it really doesn't matter what's going on. Now, when I lose that, the whole world looks bad. And I can make everyone pay. into the early 90s, I heard things about Hep C, and finally I got 92, 93, something like that. I got tested, and sure enough, I had it. They knew they had a name for it, And we just followed it for a while, and we're just going to see what happened, But in the interim, my sponsor, like as I said, also had a life of illness, and in 1995, he essentially got like that flesh-eating virus, and it just wreaked havoc on him. I think he ended up spending like 60 days in intensive care, and he was on a respirator, and I was just scared to death that he might die any day, And what would I do, Because I was, he'd been such a, he's still today my sponsor, I'm so grateful for this man. He's shown me the hope and a new way of life, that connected me to you. Through that, that initial realization that I wasn't alone that night when he spoke. And I remember going to the hospital it was, you know, a ways away, and I'd go like on Tuesdays and Saturdays and, you know, just sit with him, you know, and I think the most thing, you know, he'd be, you know, laboring with the respirator because of all the things that were shutting down. And about all I could do was put lotion on his hands and his feet, you know. And, you know, and I guess my way, that was just a way of being with him, be of service, you know. And my grand sponsor, his sponsor, was there, and I was, you know, sharing with Bobby how scared I was, you know. And Bobby gave me one of those other, you know, good NA pearls of wisdom. He says, you know, it's, you know, when everything's going good, you know, it's easy to be grateful. But he says, even if all you had was just your recovery, would you be grateful? If that's all you had. And when I looked at Steve in that hospital bed, I saw that, you know. And again, you know, the awareness that, you know, was the connection, you know, we have to a loving God. And all the people that came and saw him, all the addicts. And you kind of overwhelmed at many times the intensive care unit, you know. Because they just weren't prepared, you know, for what we can do, you know, and the healing that we do or can share with one another. And I'm very grateful he did get better, you know. But again, you know, the experiences of that, you know, have helped me grow to, you know, just deal with the next thing that happens. And shortly after that, you know, we had to put my son in treatment. And that hurt, too. I mean, it's like right at the end of that, and had to put Matt in treatment. And, you know, and of course, he'd seen me clean for a number of years at that point. And it's like, I didn't want him to have to go through this, you know. But because of you guys, we knew what to do. You know, we knew how to help. And I knew that help was available, you know, and that I just had to do the footwork. And that my higher power would take care of what needed to be taken care of. And then, you know, as a, you know, kind of got through that and, you know, a lot of crazy things going on at work and company being sold and, you know, all the things that, the external things, you know. And again, there was that stuff that Bobby said about, could you just be grateful if all you had was your recovery, you know. Because at that point I realized, my gosh, I mean, hey, things may not be all that I'd like them to be, but I'm free, you know? I mean, because I thought about coming to places like this, I couldn't go anywhere, you know? I mean, I got arrested a couple times, you know, but never spent any time really in prison, but I know what it's like to be in prison, you know? Because I was a prisoner of the disease of addiction, you know? And that's stronger than any federal, state, or county could ever be. And I had hope. And so I did have a lot to be grateful for. You know, I look at all the outside circumstances and I forget that gratitude. You know, again, it's usually in another addict that I kind of get, you know, resituated. And that's good for me. So, I've been continuing to follow up on this Hep C stuff, and, you know, some of the tests were getting worse and worse, and my doctor said, hey, I think it's time you go talk to a liver specialist. And I talked to this guy and took a bunch of, you know, blood work, and they scheduled a biopsy, and I was able actually to get the results from the biopsy I'd had in 1980, where they said, you know, chronic active hepatitis, non-A, non-B. And he was able to compare the two. He says, geez, you've had a lot of liver damage, you know, in the interim. And he says, we need to start you on this interferon right away. And again, a lot of addicts had been through it, you know, and I was ready or thought I was ready. And of course, like many things, there's been a lot of side effects that went with it. The earlier forms of treatment were tough, you know, and my moods, you know, I mean, I was just all over the map, and I know my wife was scared to death because of the things I'd say, and you know, I didn't mean to hurt her. I just seemed like in the moment I was so lost, you know, and uh, And you know, fortunately for me, you know, the treatment has worked well. Unfortunately, as soon as I stopped, you know, the virus comes back. You know, and so in the last almost 8 years, I've been on treatment for 6 and a half. You know, and I'm off right now. I went off in June, and within 5 weeks, the virus is back to you know, huge proportions. You know, and you know, I'm committed to going back on the treatment. You know. And I've got good friends, you know, that have had liver transplants, and you know, I'm grateful that those things are available to us today. But you know, I'd prefer not to go there, you know. And again, you know, that when I get thinking about, you know, all the circumstances, the health circumstances of my life, you know, I'll look at somebody and see on the outside, they're seeming good health, you know. And, you know, I'd be less than honest if I didn't say I was a little resentful at times, you know. And why me, you know. And again, you know, my sponsor, you know, taught me to, when I first got started the treatment for, or the went on the interferon and I was feeling like crap, you know. He said, write a gratitude list. I go, why would I write a gratitude list for this? And he says, write a gratitude list. And he says, look at the things you're grateful for relative to this illness. And I thought about that for a while, and ultimately, you know, it came to me. I had insurance, you know. They knew what it was. They had a name for it. There was a treatment, you know. I had a fellowship, you know. And I had a sponsor, and I had a loving family, and I had a loving God, you know. And so the things that have troubled me the most, you know, if I get in touch with it, I really have, you know, a lot to deal with, you know, and it, you know, doesn't always, you know, erase the circumstances of what I'm going through. But again, my sponsor has been a great inspiration to me because even from 95, he's, you know, he's had a couple more illnesses where just weren't quite sure he was going to make it out, you know, and he's been a real inspiration of hope, you know. I mean, he's a real fighter, and really, you know, I listen to Claire, and I'm really awed at you know, her bravery, you know, for saying I'm going to go swimming, you know, and because I think that's wonderful, you know, and you know, take those opportunities, and you know, and again, I think we're so blessed, and I wanted to share, you know, kind of close by sharing I guess for my mind, you know, the real spiritual, some of the spiritual awarenesses I've had in recovery. And when I was using, my father had emphysema. And I was always afraid that he might pass away before he saw me clean. You know, he knew I was struggling. You know, and I mean, I was such a successful addict, I went from owning my own house to, you know, living in my parents' front bedroom, you know. And you know, I told everyone that they were retired and traveled, and I just took care of their house for them. The reality is I didn't have any money after I was done using, you know. That's how much my life had shrunk up, you know. But you know, unfortunately, and I know this isn't true for everyone, but I, you know, my dad did get to see me clean, you know. And my parents are not addicts, and they don't really understand this program. And I know there's times where I would stop at their house on like a Saturday afternoon or Saturday evening, going up to one of the L.A. County men's correctional institutions on an H&I panel. It was just one of the things that I love to do dearly, you know. And you know, he'd just look at me like, geez, I'm, you know, why don't you spend time with, you know, Evelyn or doing something else, and I go, you know, I try and balance all the parts of my life, but not forget where I come from, you know, and that recovery is such a, you know, without my recovery, I have nothing, you know, and you know, he'd sort of, well, okay, but not really understand it, you know, and I used to try and explain, you know, recovery and addiction, and, you know, his eyes would just sort of cross, you know, and someone told me once that, you know, trying to explain something like that to, you know, someone who doesn't understand it. It's kind of like teaching a pig to sing. all it does is frustrate the hell out of you and piss off the pig, you know. And so, you know, and that's kind of true, you know. And finally, I remember talking to Steve, my sponsor, and saying, you know, it's like, I talked to him and talked to him. He goes, well, why are you talking to him? You know, he says, the only one has to understand is you. And you got it, Jeff. You know, and so I could let go of that, you know. And fortunately, I was, he did pass away in 98. And at that point, I had like 10, a little over 10 years clean. And we talked maybe a year or so before he passed away. And I didn't even bring it up. It sort of came up, you know, about recovery and you know, my participation in Narcotics Anonymous. And he says, you know, I really don't understand this, but you've really found something, and I'm happy for you. And he says, and Jeff, I'm looking for you. I have an older sister and two younger brothers. And he says, you found something that I think you can help with when I'm gone. You know, and that was the gift that I always wanted, just, you know, to find, to really feel like I belong, you know, and to be of service. And so that was a real spiritual awareness for me that, you know, I got through Narcotics Anonymous. And another one I wanted to share was when I was so sick in the 60s, and, you know, a lot of like emergency surgeries, a lot of time in intensive care myself. And I remember the doctor telling me a couple years later, he says, you know, Jeff, it was an absolute miracle you survived. And he said, God must have a plan for you. And as a 15-year-old kid, I thought, well, that's great, you know. I think my ego was already, you know, grandiosity was already full. I'm thinking a Nobel Prize, you know, cure for cancer, you know, some simple thing, you know. And actually, in the depths of my using, I was really resentful at God because I thought, you know, what? Is this what your plan for me was? To be this hopeless, helpless, you know, person, you know, just, you know, consumed by drugs and wanting to find, you know, get more. I thought, why didn't you just let me die? You know, and, you know, I was really angry. And, you know, today, you know, I know what my life is about, you know, and because, hey, what's a second life worth? You know? And I've gotten more than one. You know, I think that I had an opportunity to live when I was so sick in 67. And in 1987, when I got clean, a whole new life started for me here. You know? And I look at the world at large outside and what people wouldn't do to have a second life. You know? And we get that privilege every day. You know? And, you know, it really is a privilege. And, you know, and even when I mess it up, I can start my day all over again, you know. And, you know, I mean, if I had to find my well-being by looking in the newspaper, I mean, I'd give it up right now, you know. As far as I'm concerned, hey, this convention, this meeting, you know, our fellowship is the best place in the world, you know, for hope. And, you know, and so I know what my little simple role is today. It's not some big thing, you know. It's to continue my recovery and to share that message with a suffering addict who wants a new way of life. That's the gift I've been given. And the last thing I really wanted to share with you is that, you know, as probably evidenced by my pitch here, you know, my real focus is gratitude. And again, it goes back to one of those little messages sitting in a chair talking to my grand sponsor, and Bobby looked at me and says, you know, it's impossible to be grateful and pissed off at the same time. It's really true, you know. Now I can give up my gratitude in a heartbeat, you know. And what I've learned from you guys is that on a regular basis, I have to apologize to God for losing my gratitude because I've been given so much, you know, and, you know, a life of freedom, a life of being connected, a life of hope, even with the trials and tribulations, you know, and whatever I've gone through, I've not had to do it alone. And I have a panel I go to, a lockdown panel, H&I panel on the second Thursday of every month where I live. And the name of this, it's a treatment facility, but the name of it is Alternatives. And it kind of is on the wall above the locked doors. And, the two middle letters are N-A, And, I look at that as a lot of acronyms for us, never alone, And here I'm, whatever thousand miles away from my home, and I'm in a meeting, And whether this convention was here or not, there'd be meetings here. And I've had the privilege of going to NA meetings, wherever I've been, And a couple years ago after the World Convention, I had a business trip, and I went halfway around the world to Finland, I went to an NA meeting, didn't understand one word they said, but I understood the feeling, and actually they all spoke English, so they treated me really nicely. And I have truly been blessed, and I have all you to thank for it. And I love you for that. Thank you.
Okay. First, I'd just like to say, the great thing about illness and recovery is being in recovery with the illness. Because without it, there would be something. And let's thank Claire and Jeff again for speaking. And David P. has been asked to read, "We Do Recover." David. We'll close by forming the circle and doing the third step prayer. Okay, I'm all the silence.